extremely cold, however.
Is it really?
Let me tell you, right now it is. Well, it was. Oh no, it's not. It's 5 degrees. It's not as cold as it was. It's been pretty cold.
Yesterday was quite cold. It was a strange, like very clear, but it's just, when the wind bit you, it was you knew about it. It was suboptimal, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. We're live, everybody. Welcome to Brain Food Live on Air. We're bringing it to you every Friday. It's episode 142. And we have got a very exciting show for you today. And it's a show I think it's going to be really relevant to anybody who pays attention to Brain Food Live because obviously we spend a lot of time looking and trying to recruit recruiters. We are generally recruiters ourselves, I believe. It's going to be a show really focusing on what do we look out for when we come across a recruiter that we might want to hire? How do we determine what is a good recruiter and what is a bad recruiter? What are the red flags? Is there such a thing as a red flag? Is there such a thing as a good recruiter, irrespective of whatever context we put them in? Is there people that are genuinely good at a certain type of recruitment, might not be suitable for others? So today we'll be looking at all of those things. Hopefully, we can walk away from the end of this show with some idea as to how to get better at actually hiring people like ourselves. Because I think sometimes I think in the same way that no one genuinely eats their own dog food, I think recruiters often fail at recruiting recruiters ourselves, don't we? It's like, yeah, he must be good. He worked for that company. Brilliant. Let's get him in. And actually, no. Is that actually the right way to do it? Anyway, a bit of a sound check. So folks, people on Crowdcast, thanks for having me chat. Please do vote on the poll, by the way. It looks to be popular. So make sure you go ahead and do that at the bottom of your screen. But let me know if you can hear me first. The sound is okay. Give me a yes, no, maybe on the chat there. We should be live streaming this in LinkedIn. I fingers crossed. I hope it is. If you can hear me on LinkedIn, give me some sort of thumbs up. Let me know. Give me a comment or something. I don't think you can do a thumbs up on LinkedIn. And I believe we are out on Twitter and Facebook as well. So if you can hear me in those places, please do say so. And it would be good to know whether that's the case. There's been loads of like UI changes on every system I use, which it confuses me. So this is guaranteed screw-ups down the line. Anyway, we can crack through. So quick word to our sponsors, as ever. Our sponsors this week are Brick. Brick have been awesome. They've been a great sponsor and supporter of Brain Food. They've been really getting involved in different types of channels that we operate. Brick are a talent intelligence platform, folks. They're going to help you better understand the data that is generated by the candidates as they transition from being prospects to employees, and on through the rest of their journey with your company. So if you're looking at assessing people, if you're looking at assessing how they interview, if you're looking at assessing how they onboard, looking how you perform as a business bringing these people on board, brick.com, BRYQ.com are the business you need to check out. International company, I think they've got Markelos, Greek CEO, and so they're big in Europe as well, but definitely one to look out for. I've just shared the link in the chat stream. Okay, welcome, Adam Gordon. Great to see you, man. I hope you had a good weekend. I hope things are going well for you, sir. And I hope you had time to read the newsletter, man. I mean, did you have a chance to review it? And you know, if so, what was interesting?
I did, and there was quite a few interesting things. So the first one that I found just hilarious was, why is LinkedIn so cringe?
Yes, very
As
popular one.
I mean, I'm probably gonna have to admit I'm a pretty much a LinkedIn addict. I have been since, I don't know, 2006, 2005, six, something like that. The guy who wrote this, Trung Phan, is an excellent writer, and he's very funny. So he described LinkedIn as full of humble brags, fake gurus, faux inspiration. The description that I liked best was long form hustle porn, and more. He actually searched on Twitter the terms LinkedIn and the word cringe, and came up with tons of tweets from people explaining, you know, over the years why LinkedIn is so cringe to them. He says it's inbuilt into the platform because of things like the ability to endorse people.
Yes.
Or the encouragement to congratulate people for their work anniversaries and, you know, kind of brown nosing sort of facilities like that. And then he does also say that the fact that I think he described HR and recruitment people as the top dogs on LinkedIn, and that incentivizes cringe behavior even more. So with people just like posturing and humble bragging and all that type of thing. And it was very funny. Really enjoyed that.
Do you know LinkedIn? I mean, I one of these LinkedIn expose type stuff. I'm waiting for the time where something I've posted is going to be screen capped, and I'll be like lambasted on there because I'm probably guilty of some of the crimes that have been listed on there, even though with no intent. Typically, you know, I'm trying to generate conversations, but I guess it might irritate some people. And I certainly wouldn't want to be on the end of Trung Fan's kind of commentary, even though I think he didn't like particularly hammer individuals. He was more commentating on the general vibe of the place. But he did actually, not only was it a very funny post, but he did actually explain, as you say, why this happened. And I thought it was a really educational way to understand how the algorithm works. So I categorize it as content, sort of as a content marketing category post, because I think if you are on LinkedIn and you do use it, or you want to get better at using it and getting more views for your stuff, actually reading this post can really help. Not only, you know, obviously help you de-cringe your posts, but also understand, you know, how the algorithm actually works. It gives a very, I thought, user-friendly way of describing how that operates. And if you know how that system works, then obviously it's going to be in your favor. But brilliant post. I've shared it in the link and in the chat stream there, so make sure you read it. Okay.
I think you're guilty of long-form hustle porn. That's what I think I am. I probably am.
I'm guilty of anything. I never promote work, though. Don't say, I would get up at 4. You know, I always tell people I'm going to go for a bath after this, and that's totally what's going to happen. I'm checking out at 3, and I'm running a bath and going to sleep in there. So it's hardly hustle, isn't it? Anyway.
He wrote another article, which I read, which was about, he described it as like the LinkedIn mafia, and look at all these people from LinkedIn who have gone on to run other companies and stuff like that. And I was a little bit, underwhelmed by that. It wasn't like the PayPal mafia or anything. It was just like this person was like chief product officer at LinkedIn, and now they're chief product officer at, Hopin or something. So it was, but it was quite interesting to see where people had gone.
That's true. I wonder how powerful LinkedIn is as a brand for your career journey, you know.
I
think it's got it. Yeah, it's got to be big. Although I don't seem to encounter that many recruiters that work for LinkedIn that then move to different places. I mean, there must be a lot, but
they typically move on and up in LinkedIn, don't they? I mean, I've seen people go in as a. I know somebody who went into LinkedIn as a recruiter, like I don't know, 10 years ago, and now she's like basically chief people officer for Asia Pacific or something like that. She's gone in straight into mainstream HR and right up that tree.
You know what? You're right. It might just be the best options are always internal there. So once you're in, you never leave. So I can imagine that comp will be very good as well. Big incentive to stay and stuff. If you've worked for LinkedIn before as a recruiter, let me know. I'd be interested to hear from you. You know, I mean, what was the place like? Anyway, give us a couple more, Adam.
Right. So in the last couple of years, of course, we've seen the rise of companies putting out basically purpose-built kind of almost like employee CRMs for people that they're making redundant.
Yep.
To give those people a leg up and shine a spotlight on them and their skills to other companies that might want to hire them. And you included in the newsletter a really useful tool for hopefully people don't have to use it, but for if you do find yourself in this situation, then it's like a layoff CRM, basically, built on Coda. And yeah, it looked quite easy to use, quite useful. But actually, the reason I wanted to mention this is because the person who I went and took a look at the person who'd built this and put it on Coda, and she works, her name's Sining Chan, and she works for Coda, and her job is to build tools on Coda. And it's basically an incredible exercise of product-led growth. So, because I went into Coda, I was like, what exactly is Coda? And then when I worked out what it was, I thought, I could use this for a whole load of different things.
Yep.
So what she's done is created hundreds of different applications of Coda that you can go and just use, like open source. And it's going to generate loads of actual customers for Coda. So that's
actually
cool.
Really clever. Yeah. I didn't realize that the builder of it was internally an employee of Coda. So Coda, obviously, is basically a way in which you could build some web apps, essentially, look like, think of Notion, stuff like that. Coda's sort of along the same lines, but a bit more web oriented, I guess, a bit more sharing oriented. Having someone to just build templates and free use, everyone who uses that is going to now know Coda and probably fall in love with it and start thinking, hey, we should use this. Smart marketing. Anyway, it's a really good tool for anybody who, I think it's one of those tools that obviously you don't want to use because it basically means that your company's firing a lot of people, but it's one of those you want to just bookmark it. You should just bookmark it and basically...
I got a cat meowing in the room. Sorry, I had to move it.
No worries. We're talking about some news in the sports pages about cats recently, isn't there? But we won't go there. We don't have the time. All right, give us another one, mate.
Right, engineer called Alex Chesser, who writes about, I think, sort of career development, learning and development for software engineers. He is a software engineer. And he wrote a blog, which was Never Ignore a Recruiter. It was basically it was a sort of learning. Now, I'm one of these people who, when my phone rings, unless it says, like, this could be spam, we think this is spam, I always answer the phone. I always open messages when I get them to see what it is, assuming I've got the time. And the reason I do that is because I always think that some kind of communication coming to you could be a great opportunity of some sort. It might be a social opportunity, a customer opportunity, a potential candidate, something fun. And if I had recruiters approaching me, which I don't ever, but if I did, then I would absolutely be keeping them on a spreadsheet somewhere, or like in my phone book, I would be storing all of their details and I'd be replying to them and I would be keeping them sweet. And he's telling all of the software engineers that don't do that, that 1 in 100 of these people, recruiters, are going to double your salary. So you should work out ways of maintaining good relations with them. And he's included suggestions around automated communication. He's put in there like templates for the type of things to say to them and that kind of thing. And he's just right. It's just really good, right-brained human skills that he's recommending. And I don't know what it's like to get 10 approaches every day about jobs, but I know how I would respond. And I would respond by... I get approached from investors a lot, and I just put them all into one particular. I reply back and say, not right now, but I'm going to keep in touch with you. And I put them into a folder. And when I need investment, I go and talk to them all. And I say, look, you approached me a few months ago, and now's the time. So, I would be doing exactly the same if I was getting approached by recruiters.
Yeah, so basically, guys, this link is definitely, I've just shared it in chat stream. Do read it. The internet is not short of blog posts from software engineers hating on recruiters, right? I mean, it's like basically what tech people do, and in large degree justified in many respects. But this one was unusual because he actually took the reverse view and said, listen, this is actually, you're doing it wrong by being hostile to recruiters. What you want to do is basically create a CRM of the recruiters that you can potentially use in future, and find a kind of a, an automated way to basically be polite, but not to be polite and decline. So, you know, I thought that was a really useful way to think about it. Good also for us to understand a little bit on candidate psychology. So sometimes we might be a little bit frustrated that people aren't getting back to us, for instance. Why is that? Reading this post might give you a little bit of an insight as to what it feels like to be, you know, bombarded, if you will, by recruitment messaging. And a lot of people are not able to handle it in the same way that this guy did, because the default is probably just ignore it, or worse, just get hostile to people who are persistent. You know, you get, yeah, everyone knows you got to follow up on an email. You know, the first email is not necessarily the one that's going to work. You got to follow up with a second, maybe even a third. I think standard in sales is even eight, sort of drop in an eight sequence. I know you recommend three. I recommend no more than three if you're going to do that. So I think that's probably the polite enough number. But it's still too high for a lot of people, and they end up getting frustrated and annoyed, and they send back, you know, don't ever call me back again, and stuff like this. And what this fellow is saying, you know what, that's not the right approach. It potentially burns an opportunity in future for you. And it's as quick to do something different, which can actually convert someone into a friend. So I thought really interesting psychology, really interesting way of writing it. And to be honest, just a refreshing perspective from a source that typically doesn't produce this sort of sentiment. So so yeah, well worth the read. By the way, I'm going to adopt some of that sort of behavior. Like, I don't get recruited, of course, but I do get like PR people, and I do get people asking for, hey, can you promote this? And I gotta be honest, I ignore it. Like, so that's probably bad, but I literally don't respond. And I probably do come across as quite rude. I don't respond negatively, but I kind of just let it slide. But maybe I should adopt some of this guy's techniques and, you know, try and find a way to interact with people, but not in a way that's expensive in terms of time. Anyway,
it really just depends. All of that, I just want to say, I agree with all of that, but except for one thing, by the way, just to be clear, I definitely do not recommend a three-step communication program. That's batch and blast for like spammers. You got to send people the right thing at the right time, and that's like, there is no number. It's about being useful and relevant.
You're probably right. You are probably right. I guess I'm using information purely on. To be honest, I don't know where I've sourced that.
You'll be taking that out, straight out of the candidate nurture playbook from any kind of recruitment CRM that you come across.
It might just be an opinion. I was lambasted today online by saying, yeah, that's just opinion. Where's your facts? It's like, I got no facts, man. I don't do facts. You know, it's all opinion. Anyway, I mean, you might guess who might that be, by the way. So it was a funny one.
I know exactly who that is. Next time you give the facts, you'll be getting a standing applause.
I wait for it. Let's get on with the show. Let's talk about this topic of how do you tell a good recruiter. So Adam, I'm not sure whether you ever recruited a recruiter to work in your business or previously in your kind of recruiting career. Can you recall, or do you have an opinion on, you know, like, when do you tell? Like, can you tell on a CV? Is there stuff that you definitely say no to? Can you look online and think, oh, I don't like that? Like, what's your intuition tell you when you're looking at a candidate and saying, that's a good candidate, that is a bad candidate?
So, yes, I have. I've recruited lots of recruiters in previous jobs and in running my old talent sourcing business, Social Media Search. And to me, I think it's very difficult to determine from a CV if somebody is going to be good. But I think that the personal characteristic that somebody would really set them out against others for me is just terrific communication skills. And, you know, the ability to write and speak effectively, the ability to achieve influence, get to the point, no waffle, and encourage people to do what it is you need them to do. and be good at that. That's the skill to me, which is the number one. However, Mary Kay Baldino did say to me on a social media thread a couple of days ago that the one for her is she agrees with that, but she also thinks insatiable curiosity for her is the number one. And like, I absolutely agree with that as well. You see, you get given some, but this is also cute communication, right? You get given some information. You don't understand it. You got to find out, ask more questions. The five whys, get to the real, you know, root of it. So I think that communication in various different forms is, to me, the top skill. Tenacity, creativity. These are all sourcing things, I guess. But yeah, communication.
Okay, that's really interesting. It's interesting. It's going straight to the sort of less tangible skills, if you like, stuff that obviously requires a slightly different way to surface. And we all know sort of CVs are a kind of an inadequate way of doing that. But are they fundamentally useless? Like we've seen some people here say, Rob saying, hey, listen, it's got zero correlation. You know, I think that's probably incorrect. I'd love to actually test it, but obviously it's not something we can test. But I'm kind of tempted to defend the CV here simply to take a contrarian approach. But anyway, let's bring on some guests who also recruit recruiters, and we'll see what their thoughts are. And the reason we selected these guests, by the way, is because they all work for different types of company. So we've got people who work in-house, internal recruiting. We've got people that work in RPO. So Katrina's going to come and join us. We've got people that work in a portfolio type of recruiting role. And Safara's going to join us there as well. And of course, we're missing agency side. So if there's any agents in the chat stream and want to commentate and come on, please do let us know, because I'd love to bring you on as well. There's Mark. Good to see you, Mark. Welcome to the show. Mark, let's go ahead and introduce yourself. So Mark, who are you and what it is you do?
So my name is Mark Dowell. I'm a tech recruiter for, at this moment, GitLab. Been in this space for a very short time, 6 years. Before this, I've been an engineer for about 20 years, so I have a little bit different view on recruiting and recruiters, for that matter. And I'm the host of my own podcast about recruiting.
That's amazing, and it's a great show as well. People should definitely check it out. We'll share the link in it to that to the people who are attending later on in the follow-up email. So we have Farah here as well. Farah, thank you for lunch. I'm still like really stuffed. I can't move as a result of that lunch. But anyway, so Farah, can you quickly introduce yourself? Who are you? What it is you do?
Yeah. So hi, everyone. My name is Farah. I am the Chief People Officer at Founders Factory. Basically started Founders Factory in 2015, and we are a venture studio and an accelerator. Over the last 5 years, we've invested in over 200 companies. So we basically help founders launch their companies and have an in-house team to kind of help support those companies. So a lot of early stage investing, basically.
Fantastic. And you've got good experience hiring for this type of recruiter, which I'd be interested to explore like different contexts of recruiting, because I think sometimes you might need different characters there. And we've got Katrina here as well. Katrina, great to see you. For the people who don't know you, Katrina, can you quickly intro yourself, please?
Yeah, sure. So I think this is my third time on here, Hung. A second time with COVID, though. So congrats.
Oh, no.
That's the right word.
Sorry if I'm
hacking through today. But yeah, so I've been in recruitment for the best part of 20 years, predominantly in in-house global talent director roles. And about 3.5 years ago, made the crazy decision to leave that behind and set up Join Talent. And yeah, when it comes to recruiting recruiters, we've hired over 200 of them in the last 2 years. And we're hiring on average in a month about 25 to 30 new roles for growth as well. So have a few views on this one. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'd love to get your views on it, you know, because I think we can. So firstly, Katrina, I'm really sorry to hear you're down with the Rona. You're the second person I've spoke to today has actually had round two. So it's obviously like, you know, quite an addictive thing to once you get it.
But you're
like,
yeah, the difference, Hung, is whenever I had it back in 2020, everyone was like, oh, no, Puri, it's terrible. And now it's like, oh, you're gross. Like, what journal have you been licking? There's no empathy anymore.
you've lost the empathy. Well, I hope you get well soon. Okay, let's talk about, I want to get to this poll straight away because I thought some of these responses have been really interesting. So can the panelists quickly look at the poll and see what the options are? I've selected these options, obviously. But I just, you know, quite interesting. There's two things that have popped up as being quite prominent as like a potential red flag. So the first one, let's talk about the high frequency of job moves. Now, is that like a bad thing? I mean, basically, and if so, like what frequency would you consider to be, hang on, we need to investigate that a little bit because it seems to be a bit choppy. And why is that necessarily problematic? So Katrina, let's go to you with this first. Again, I'm not implying it whether anybody's subscribed to the view to the poll, but I want you to kind of think about, tenure. You know, is that important when you look at a candidate, and you know, what's your thoughts when you see someone who's bounced around a bit?
So it's definitely something that would make you want to ask some questions, but it's not a showstopper necessarily, because there can be really good reasons why someone's moved around. I would never preclude somebody from having a conversation based on the fact that they've kind of job hopped or moved around quite a lot. But I'd be wanting to understand, is it because they were doing contracting or interim gigs? Have they just been really unlucky with companies that maybe didn't get their Series C funding and pulled all their recruitment 3 months after they went in? I'm much more interested in their depth, and we'll go into that in a second, but in their depth of experience. My only query would be, if somebody's only ever done short-term gigs, have they been able to build that depth of capability around stakeholder relationship building and management? I'd want to probe more into that. To me, the biggest red flags, and it's definitely what I voted for, is a per LinkedIn profile. That really worries me in somebody that's spending the bulk of their working day on that platform.
That's really interesting. Thank you very much for that answer, Katrina. I think that's a really interesting point as well. Like sometimes people can, it just might tell you what kind of recruiting they've done, which is this idea. Some people are just like in, sort of in and out merchants, build a team, move on. 3 months, maybe that's how you do it. But it may be that then leads that you're not that familiar with building like a big team for a long time. Maybe you're not that familiar with building a complicated TA function, for instance, because you don't have the time to do it. It's more just getting in there and doing the job. So maybe the perhaps level of role is a point there. Okay, how about you, Mark? What are your thoughts on this intermittency, this kind of choppiness of CV? Thoughts on this?
I want to give you a very interesting story, but basically he touched it all. It's no reason to skip on people. There are so many reasons why people moved around. I'm one of them. I had two companies that I absolutely hated. I didn't feel my in the right spot. Went to the next company and I found a good place. There are so many reasons why people leave or get laid off or anything like that. So it's not something that I would see as a red flag.
Yep. Okay. And your thoughts on this, Barry? Be nodding away. I'm assuming you might agree with this, but do you have any thoughts on this?
I have a bit of a maybe like a controversial opinion, actually. Like I don't know if I lack a bit of empathy there, but I think when I look at a CV or I look at maybe someone's LinkedIn profile, you get like hundreds of people applying to jobs, right? And you see someone who's constantly moving, 3 months, 6 months. Like if someone hasn't been in a role for a year, that depth, Katrina, that you were mentioning earlier, might not necessarily exist, or at least that's an assumption that I think we can make. And a lot of our jobs at the top of the funnel, and we're making very quick decisions just by like looking at something. And maybe there's an intrinsic bias that I have, but like when I see a CV that, you know, someone's moved around several times, there is potentially, or at least a hypothesis whereby you can assume that the lack of sort of depth in that experience that someone has potentially acquired might not necessarily be there. And I'm all for asking sort of questions and being curious about like why they've made that move. You know, Mark, you mentioned, you know, you've kind of moved around, and that's totally cool. You can ask those questions. But I think when you have a role that you're recruiting for, specifically for recruiters, it's like you kind of know that people are potentially moving around for a different reason, perhaps.
Yeah, and on that note, just to follow up as well, Fario, can you also sort of have a, inevitably your risk of aversion will be triggered a little bit because you're thinking, I'm trying to build a team. This person doesn't seem to be hanging around long enough. That's fine. Maybe they are a person that bounces from one project to the next. I did that. Everyone did that at a certain point. But maybe if I'm hiring, building and growing a team, I need to think that that's bigger risk than someone who hasn't had that type of experience. So it's not entirely irrelevant, but you ideally want to give people the shot. Go on, Admi, about saying something. No? Okay.
Can I just, I just want to point out something that Helen said in the, which is that so she hires in the agency space, in the recruitment agency space. And if somebody's moved around a lot, then she'd still have a conversation with them, but there's a bit of a red flag there around maybe they didn't pass probation. So I definitely can see that there's maybe a difference there, because if somebody's gone from one agency to another agency to another agency, you think the problem's probably you. And also they've made bad career decisions. Whereas somebody that's gone from, you know, four different in-house gigs in 4 years, that could much more easily be explained around building, yep, you know, learnings and experience.
Okay, Adam, you've actually come up with a sensible point. I'm amazed. But it's actually really it's really significant, because if you are an agency, there's a different set of rules. It's a different set of rules.
And it's also a different job, Hung, as well, right? So it could be, and I see this all the time, agency recruiters who move around, because maybe they're not great at sales. Doesn't mean they're not really good at recruitment, though.
Could be good in-house type, right? It could be, for instance, if you're moving around, firstly, there's like economic disincentives to do that, because theoretically you should be like building your customer base, and over time you get more money because you've got more customers and your commission rates go up and stuff like this. You don't want to be moving every 3-6 months, typically, as a recruitment agent. In fact, the longer you stay, the bigger your portfolio of customers, the more success you should have. Whereas that may not apply for a different context of recruiter, which is what we're going to get to, by the way, because all three of you guys come from different sort of context. Okay, let's look at the poll again.
Can I just quickly say one more thing about that? And I do appreciate what Katrina just said about it's a different role when you're in-house or RPO, so you're pretty much in-house versus the recruitment agency thing. If somebody's absolutely no good at sales, then how good are they going to be at convincing the candidate that it's the right job? So that's one part of it. But what that doesn't mean, they could be brilliant at assessment or other bits of it. But I think sales and general recruitment in any part of it, you've got to be good at influencing people. The assessment bit, that's different.
On that note, I would say basically there might be like with these different types of sales, right? So if you're talking about opening a door, and person who, you know, you must be really good at first contact, you've got a really established credibility of first 10 seconds, etc. That is pretty much the classic agency style. But as an in-house person, maybe you don't have to do that in the same way. You do get treated differently from candidates. Typically, there's a little bit more sort of wiggle room if you're coming from a sort of in-house, I would say. And oftentimes, you know, you've got the support of internal people like your other engineers, for instance, and stuff like that you can lean on. I think it's less pure play sales. More, I think influence is important, though, absolutely. So that is something that's to think about. Maybe when you're bringing them into interview or face-to-face and they don't convince at that point, maybe that's something you need to examine. But okay, let's move on to think about LinkedIn. Poor LinkedIn profiles, which actually it does astonish me. There are recruiters that literally have this. or, you know, it's like very sparse, don't have a picture. I couldn't understand it. Like, why is that even a thing for your recruiting? So that is like flagged up as the main issue. Let's break this down a little bit more. What is the main problem on a bad recruiter LinkedIn profile? Any thoughts on this? Let's go around. Mark, you go first on this.
They're the business card for your company. It's that simple. And if you can't be a business card, how can you be a good recruiter? If I'm talking to somebody, I want to know who they are. If I see a recruiter that has no social media presence at all, how are they gonna pull in candidates? Or are they just sourcing all the time, which I can't believe? So it's, for me, you're a business card. And that's, you're the main face of a company. If you don't have that, especially as an in-house recruiter, that's a huge red flag for me.
So what is a bad one though? I mean, let's say they have something, they've thrown something up there, but you know, you've looked at it and thought, wow, that's like, you need a bit of work. Like, what's the thing you notice when you see that?
So often I look at simple things like a picture, right? It's humanizing yourself. It's a little, you're a business card again. But what I also see is that they lack the media presence. I'm okay with the resume part of LinkedIn, that you don't have that well spread out. I really don't care. But if a recruiter doesn't have any social media presence, so no shares about the company, no interaction with the community or whatsoever, that's my red flag. I don't care about the resume part.
So it's the activity, the lack of activity on this platform would say, hey, this is kind of unusual, like what's going on there. Farrell, what about your thoughts on this? Bad LinkedIn profile for a recruiter, red flag, why, and what are the worst things that you think you'd kind of reject a person as a result of that person having that or not having it?
Yeah, I think I kind of agree with Mark, your sentiment there. The only kind of challenge I have around having not necessarily having a photo, and I appreciate that, you know, you're representing the brand and it's like representing like the company as you described the business card, but I think some people avoid photos for diversity issues and challenges. And I think like, you know, you immediately see someone's face and you like make a judgment as a recruiter or anyone making that judgment based on someone's color of their skin, or, you know, you just make those initial sort of gut instincts. So I actually try to, when I see someone who does not have a photo, I try to remind myself that I almost respect the person for doing that, because there might be reasons why they don't have their photo or information on it, because you don't want to like bias people in their decision making, I guess.
On this, just want to interject one thing here as well, which is a really important point that you made, Farah, is that there's a setting on LinkedIn which actually prevents the photo from being displayed by default. So some of these people do actually have photos, but if you don't actually set it so that more than like second or third degree connection can see it, if it's not absolutely public, it may show up as having not a photo, and therefore you might then think, oh, what the hell's going on with this candidate? He's pretty poor. But it might just be a setting. Everyone should check this, by the way. It's in your settings. Have a look at, are you showing your full profile, your photo to your non-first degree connections? I reckon a lot of recruiters are basically not doing that simply because they forgot about it or they've never checked.
I believe Farah's absolutely right in what she just said. However, would that not be in the context of that person being a candidate more so than being a rep for their organization? So if I'm a rep for my organization, I want to generate rapport as quickly as possible with the people that I'm trying to hire. And, you know, people are definitely put off by profiles with no picture because it looks like it could be catfishing or something like that. Does it feel like if you've got a picture,
Daniel's actually mentioned that. Yeah, Daniel in the chat just mentioned that. It's like there's a trust factor there, because if there's no picture, it kind of helps you think it's a fake, or it helps you kind of understand, hang on, I don't trust this person because I can't even see, you know, any kind of visual image. So yeah, absolutely, Adam, I think you're right on that. Katrina, any thoughts on this? Like, what are the things you're looking at on LinkedIn? You think, I'm not happy with that.
So probably three things for me. One, a recruiter that isn't open to connections without you having to put their email address in. That's always very bizarre to me. Don't get me wrong, I know that there may be an incredibly rare situation, some other reasons for that, but it is past remarkable. Second one for me is, particularly if they're now applying for in-house or RPO type roles, when you read their description of their experience, for that description to be all about KPIs and sales targets, not talking about candidates or finding talent, that's always a little bit of a concern in terms of what motivates them. And then final one, we've seen this quite a lot recently, probably more so as people are starting to redesign themselves as TA people, when that's maybe been like a side gig for them in previous roles, when they're applying for TA roles or presenting themselves as a recruiter, but it's really unclear on their LinkedIn profile how or where they've got the 7, 10 or 15 years TA experience that they're purporting to have. So that's always a little bit of a concern in terms of if they're then reaching out to candidates, even if they got that expertise, their profile looks really confusing. So I'd always suggest to people, if they're pivoting their career a bit and they're taking their side gig and making that more their front and center career, you kind of want to do a little bit of an edit on your LinkedIn profile and make that into something that reads more sensibly.
Yeah, really good point. So incongruity, right? So if you've got another property somewhere else, your website, you're on different social platforms or whatever, and it's not congruent with what you have on LinkedIn, bear in mind people are going to cross-reference LinkedIn as your first thing they're going to check. That's going to just create doubt in your mind. So make sure you have that nailed. Second point you mentioned, Katrina, really important, is if you as the recruiter of this recruiter have a sense you don't entirely trust this LinkedIn profile, how does that affect how this person interacts with candidates? Because if there's stuff in there that you're not happy with, you got to understand that this person might be going out to recruit highly skilled in-demand people. They will also have an elevated kind of risk aversion to dealing with people there. If you've kind of made it in such a fashion that, you know, triggers those things, it's not going to be helpful. So I think there's probably all of us need a LinkedIn, this kind of audit. I'm sure there's a bunch of people that produce this service, but I've never looked at my LinkedIn. It's like one of those things you forget about. You stick it in, you update it, and you just don't think about it anymore, particularly if you're not actively looking. But probably on a yearly basis, you should go through it and just make sure that it's kind of aligned with where you want to drive things. Okay, let's move on to other things that you want to look out for. So you've got on a phone call with this person or a Zoom call with this person. What are the things that, again, would cause you to raise a little bit of a red flag? Not a veto, but there's some behavior or some attitude or something happening in a video communication that's caused you to think, hang on, I need to, you know, this person hasn't convinced me for this. Thoughts on this? Let's go again with you, Mark.
Research, curiosity. If people apply, and this happens so much, and they have no clue what they're applying for, they haven't even looked at the careers page, that's just, for me, basically the end of the interview. As a recruiter, you should be curious. You should be doing research. Those kind of things are very tough for me to step over.
Right. So basically, if the applicant has come in, so this is where you've got an advert, they've come in and they don't actually know about the company, that they can't tell you what the company does. They've just literally, you know, reached for any app. That's like, see you later. I think that's fair enough. Harsh, but
especially as a recruiter, it's your. So when I talk to people about a job, right, in my case, almost always technical recruitment, and they have no clue what kind of tech stack they're looking at or what kind of product it is. That's basically a big sign that they don't care about what they're doing. They're just, I want to be recruited. That's it. Well, especially in tech, but in other roles as well, it's so important to have the domain knowledge, and it's so important to gain that domain knowledge. You don't have to have it yet, but if you're not curious enough to dive into it, this is not the job for you.
Yeah. So it's almost like you can't use the interview as an exploratory thing. Like sometimes that can be quite rude, can't it? Where, you know, you've applied, but yeah, you'll use the interview to do the research if you like. You know, you tell me about it. No, you need to do some research beforehand and don't waste the person's time. Let's talk about another Zoom video experience. So you got a problem with that. Farah, you've interviewed a bunch of people. You know, why do people not pass the video interview for you?
So actually, I take a little bit of a different approach. I always, before I spend any time with any candidate, especially like hiring for my team, I will always send them like a deck around what Founders Factory is, what the challenges around, like, we have like a talent deck. So specifically the challenges that we're trying to solve in terms of like recruiting founders, which is basically what we hire our recruiters to do. So I send them a deck. And the first question I ask them is, have you looked at the deck? And what questions do you have? So I kind of turn it around on them instead of me asking them the questions, because they're kind of like expecting, you know, a traditional interview is like, I'm responsible for asking questions, but I turn it around straight away. Have you read the deck? Do you understand what Founders Factory does? Tell me about the questions or the sort of concerns that you have about like our business model, as an example, and just kind of see how they think about it. And usually you'd be surprised, like people The good people, they like read it and they have those questions because they've thought about it. They've done some research, going to your point, Mark. But then you'd be surprised, a lot of people don't actually read it. And I think there's a big difference between people just like job hunting and like mass applying to like hundreds of jobs to be a recruiter versus like genuinely you're like interested in what I'm trying to do here.
I've got a great idea. It's a follow-up on your great idea, Farah. I think people should send like an empty deck. And then just say, hey, did you read it? And then if they say, yeah, I read it, it's amazing. Oh, I love this, this, and this. You know. Immediately, you know.
BS. Well, you know they're a liar.
You're kidding about this, right? But this is no joke. So GitLab, where I work, has a 18,000-page handbook. So often I ask them, hey, did you read the whole handbook? And they will not, yeah. I said, all 18,000 pages? And they're like, oh, crap. It's people bluff. They always bluff. Nobody read 18,000 pages. Come on. But they still, like you said, they still say, yeah, I read it. They didn't.
The question is that important? Like, if they lie, is that a knockout? Why, though?
I mean,
be honest. I didn't have time. It's too much. Or, hey, I didn't find relevant. I can handle all kind of answers. But lying? You're becoming a recruiter. I want you to sell my company or our company towards candidates. Are you going to lie to them as well?
It's a bit of a trap, though, isn't it?
It is. Oh, yeah. I would not recommend anyone do that. It just occurred to me that I always think stupid things, you know? It's like, is that fun? Is that a fun thing to do? No, it isn't.
I read it. I'm not sure if I would or I wouldn't. I mean, I'm not generally a liar, but I'm not sure what I'd say if I was faced with that question.
I tell you what
most
would be impressive.
Most people say I read part of it.
Yeah, I think that's would be impressive answer. If they push back and say, hey, there's nothing in the thing. Because that tells me that they're prepared to challenge the process a little bit. So they have tried to read it. They've just been confronted with something unexpected and they're actually trying to interrogate what's going on. I think that helps with a little bit of strength of character and stuff like this. I think that's a useful thing. But I agree, it will be too harsh for you to deploy that at the early stage. Maybe at the very end, maybe at some point, if you've gone through a process and you send them, let's say, financial accounts or something over the last couple of years, hey, have a read of this, and maybe that's, if they haven't read that, then potentially you could go back. Anyway, I've distracted. Go ahead.
Just ask a quick side question to Mark. The 18,000 page GitLab handbook. I mean, have you got like a team of people who are working on continuously updating that? Because it must be dynamic, surely.
Yeah, so it is. So they have a mantra that basically says everybody can contribute. So everybody's a maintainer of the handbook.
I see.
And even if you see an issue, you can actually pull in a merge request to fix something in the handbook. Even if you're outside of the company. So what we basically do is it's an open source company and we open source our handbook as well, the way of our work. You can actually see your interview process. You can actually see everything in our handbook.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting company to know more about. We should probably do an open source culture type of show at some point also. Katrina, how about you? Video interview, you've interviewed a bunch of people. Probably by the time it gets to you, though, maybe they've already jumped through a few hoops and they've interviewed with other folks. But what is it that you're looking for? So a recruiter might have already passed some of those preliminary tests, and then you dropped in. Probably your internal recruiter is telling, hey, this guy's great. What gets you to say no to that person?
So I think, probably two things. So on a Zoom interview, and it sounds crazy that in 2022 we're still saying this, but literally physically the presentation that someone turns up with, I'm like, hey, listen, if you fancy having a replica AK-47 on your wall, because that's your decor choice, that's awesome for you. But that's probably not an appropriate thing to have in the background of your Zoom call when you're interviewing for jobs. That absolutely happened. Or if you, if you're heading to the beach, throw a shirt on over your swimming costume before you come on the call. Just say, we're casual, but we're not that casual. Or you probably have a table in your house, one table at least. Try using that to do your interview, not sitting on your couch with your laptop precariously wobbling on the arm of your sofa, making me seasick. And it sounds crazy, but these are things that really happen. And what it does is, we get lots of amusing anecdotes from it. What it really does on a serious level is make me question that person's judgment. And that's so important, because as a recruiter, you need really good judgment. You're in weird situations every day. You're dealing with humans. Humans don't always do what you think they're going to do. And sound judgment and maturity are really key facets. So straight away, I start to question whether that person really has the values and skills that we need. I think on a bigger bit, though, and I'm so cross that Adam stole my word for it, because curiosity is our number one word that we use at JT. Experience is obviously important, relevant to the level of role that you're applying for, of course, but that plasticity of thinking for me is what makes a difference. If you take two people with really good recruitment experience, maybe one's got 15 years hands-on tech recruitment experience, but they've got a very fixed mindset. They're like, I know how to do my job. Nobody needs to tell me how to do my job. I use these tools. I've always done it that way. Thanks. Just get out of my face and let me get on with it. Will they deliver results for you? Of course they will. But if I put them next to somebody who's maybe got 5 or 6 years experience, but a growth mindset where they're like, oh my God, a new tool, chuck it at me. Let me go and try that. Oh, like you've just given me some education on new approaches that are working in that market. Let me go A/B test that with my candidates. When you look at their performance over 6 months, 12 months, you will see a massive gulf. And that person with less experience, but a more growth and open mindset and more curiosity will consistently outperform that person that's got quite a fixed mindset. So that's the number one thing that we look for beyond the core experience when we're hiring people. And I actually think it talks a lot to their values as a person, how well they'll fit into our company, because we're all TA geeks and we like to get our TA geek on in our comms and stuff like that. I think it tells us a lot about a person.
So what you're saying, Katrina, is that this person needs to just be like really into it. I think Farah, you mentioned earlier, there's a difference between just job seeking and someone who's actually pursuant of a career, let's say, they're really into this thing. Whereas other people might just say, I just need to pay the rent and all this. And there's obviously a space for those types of people also. But if you're like building a company or you're caring about your team, you're obviously going to care more about hiring people that have that intrinsic motivation. Totally. And the question is, how do we pull that through? Okay, let's do a quick break because we always do this in the middle of the show. Two things you need to know, folks, as you're watching this. Number one, if you have any questions for our guests, please make sure you ask a question at the bottom of the screen. We're going to get to those in at the end. Ala, thank you for asking yours. We'll get to that point. So ask the question and ask a question feature. And secondly, we're going to make sure that nobody leaves Brain Food Live like wanting to continue the conversation and not be able to do so. So we always take this opportunity to share and connect with everyone else who's paying attention to this show. So if you're watching this, please share your link into the chat stream right now or comment below if you're on LinkedIn. Make sure you connect with everyone else who happens to also be on this thread. Everyone here is caring about this idea about how do we recruit more recruiters? How do we do it well? Please make sure you connect with everyone else here. That gives you the chance to continue the conversation when we finish the show. So I'll give you a moment to ping your stuff down there. Okay, I would also share mine, by the way, but I've hit the limit, and that's not to boast or anything, but it basically means that it's really difficult for me to. I've actually got to delete people, and one of the things that LinkedIn doesn't do is actually give you any filters to help you do that. You can only search on name. And you know, I end up searching for people with names beginning with X and stuff, like looking for fake profiles, basically. And then I generate a bunch of people from Greece or something, and it's like, oh, you know, suddenly I'm making prejudicial decisions. So it's like really, really difficult for me to do that. So anyway,
I'll delete you to free up some space.
Actually, yeah, I think yes, I'll tick that one straight away, Adam. No, don't do that. I'll be devastated. Okay. Let's talk about some other ways to assess a good recruiter. So you've done a Zoom interview, you've done all of this. What about sort of this? Sometimes we do blind sort of reference checking, don't we? I mean, I'm not sure what the ethics around that, but it kind of makes sense a little bit. You call around, you think, you know what? This person used to work in that company. Oh, I know this person there. Let's have a chat with that person. What if you get some information that is not a ringing endorsement? You read between the lines, you know, that's a little bit off there. How do you kind of use that information, or do you deny it, or how does that work if you do practice this? So I'll open this out in case you have done this. What was your approach and how did you deal? Adam, feel free to answer if you.
I'll just go first. I never, ever, ever do it because I never do it because I don't care what anybody else thought. I don't care about that previous relationship. I'll make up my own mind based on whether I think this person's going to be good for my company or not. There's two sides to every story. The chances are that somebody's going to say something negative about a past colleague. And I don't really want to hear that. That person's changed by now. So I just never, ever do it.
Right. Fine. Which I think is a very fair position, Adam. Although I will kind of come back to it with a different technique, which I hope might change your mind. Any thoughts on this? If you've done this and you've done some reference checking, like, and you found something that's a little bit strange or you're not happy with, how do you deal with that information?
So I tried.
Sorry, go ahead, Farah.
Sorry, I was just going to say that there are usually concerns that are in my mind about a candidate after I've met them maybe a couple of times or they've gone through the process. And so if there is one niggling concern, I will do the back channel reference, but I will very specifically ask like what it is that I'm trying to probe on versus like a lot of references are very like open-ended and it's like, oh, is this person, do you rate this person, or is this person someone that you think I should hire, versus like, I think if you're intentional with the questions you ask based on the mindset of like what you have evaluated up until that point in the interview process, I think you can be very intentional with the questions you ask is basically my approach. And I also try to do it as early in the process as I can, to try and get that second opinion. It's always helpful to like bounce an opinion, especially if it's someone you know, like the community in London is very small, right? So, we can ask friends and usually people are genuinely honest and willing to help, I guess.
Yeah, but there are legality issues as well. So thank you for introducing that, Julia. How about your thoughts on this, Katrine? You've hired like hundreds of people. I don't think you can neglect this part of it. Like, surely you have to speak to, because what about fraudulent people? What about people who, there's no way you might know them, especially with an international company, right? You're recruiting people from different places. So what kind of information do you extract during these types of reference calls? And what is like something you hear that will cause you to stop the process?
So I guess there's two different bits of it. So there's the there's the regular traditional referencing. And I'm always concerned about regular traditional referencing. And I say that having run in previous roles referencing teams of 20, 30 people doing referencing for other companies as well, that you get little to no value on that. I could literally, out of probably hundreds of thousands that I have overseen at a management level of references, I could count on probably at the most two hands the number of times that we have not proceeded with somebody because we've got genuinely bad reference on them, because people just don't give a reference. In terms of the back channel piece, though, I agree with Farah completely. It's not something that I would ever do as standard. I like to agree with Mark. We make our own judgment, and somebody who could be great with us may not have been good somewhere else because it's a different culture, right? We even see that actually in our own projects. Like, our recruiters are awesome, obviously. But we can have a recruiter that goes in with one client and they'll do a good job. It'll be fine. And then they go into the next client and they're a rock star. You're like, what happened? How did that person go from good to stratospherically amazing? And it's just a different culture and they just vibed better with that client. And that's that small difference that makes a big difference to performance. However, if I've got a niggling doubt, obviously, then I will look at, okay, well, let me just go sound out somebody I trust, but somebody who I know, if this person's worked with them, has a similar approach and culture to my company. So it's as much apples for apples as I could get. Where I'm more likely to do a little bit of back channel actually wouldn't be in recruiter roles. It would be more like a business development type role, where I'd be really interested in speaking to people in my network not necessarily who this person had worked for, but maybe who'd been clients or prospective clients, because I'm interested to see how they came across. But for recruiters, it would be a rare event, and it would be because there's something I'm concerned about.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair answer. And a note, by the way, that we don't have a representative from a recruitment agency here, but I think if we did, they would say, yeah, the references are definitely, you have to do them, because we can't trust the sales sort of everyone says of obviously hit target and like Zuba, whatever. And it's like, we actually don't trust the information. So I think there's that element. One way in which the reference...
Even internally, Hung, honestly, when I worked in unsaid big corporate, where everyone's got my LinkedIn profile so they can figure it out, a perfectly legitimate way of getting rid of a poor performer in your team was giving them a top-rated performance review as your internal reference. So you even do it inside companies. If you want to get rid of someone from your team and you're in a corporate, you never give them a bad performance review, because you're never going to get rid of them, because that's their equivalent of an internal reference.
Yeah, very, very interesting. There's a funny story about that back in my agency days, but I won't repeat it because we don't have time. it's the most innovative recruitment service ever provided. But anyway, let's talk about the one way in which reference checking, we can get over the ethical side of it, is if you change the mindset away from it to yes, no. So let's say you've made the decision you're going to hire a person. You're totally right. You're going to make your own decision. It's a different experience they had in the past. What you can use it for, though, is to try and educate yourself as to how best to get value out of your relationship with that person. So in other words, you could say, okay, I want to get better at managing and help making sure this new hire that we've already made the decision on to improve, let's speak to someone who's done this before, and then say, okay, how best to get the out of Katrina or out of Adam or whatnot. But and that you'll be able to surface up other bits of information that will help you be a better manager. Or if something does emerge from that conversation that causes you further concern, you might then still be able to use that information before a full commitment. Any other ways, Adam, we've got to move on. Any other ways in which we can assess or kind of figure out whether a recruiter is bad or good? We had CV, we had LinkedIn, we've got the video feeling, we've got referencing. What else can we do to assess a recruiter's good or bad status? Any thoughts on this? Open to anybody.
So I wanted to ask everybody if the concept of like shared network. So, I mean, for Katrina, for example, I can't imagine there's almost anybody that you would be hiring who doesn't have at least some shared connections on LinkedIn with you. But if you look at some, this is a slight LinkedIn question again, though. If you look at somebody on LinkedIn and you go, they don't appear to have much of a network, or like they've got no shared connections with me or anything like that. Do you think maybe they're just not into this? Or, you know, what do you think about that? Anything or nothing?
But it depends on the seniority of the role that they're applying for, because the more senior, the more I would expect that they would have a more developed network. Also, I guess for us, it's a bit of a hard question to answer, because if you think about like my team spread across 19 countries. So do I expect, if I'm interviewing a recruiter in Mexico or I'm recruiting somebody in Singapore or Japan, do I expect they're going to have much crossover with my network that's very EU stroke North America heavy? That wouldn't be past remarkable to me. I think what more than that, it's probably if someone turns up on the call, and I know we've touched on it already, but they just haven't researched anything, that they've not even looked at your LinkedIn. I had somebody a few weeks ago turn up for an interview with me, and literally in the space of 30 minutes, explained to me what internal recruitment was, what RPO was, and also the skills that you might need to be an entrepreneur, all in one 30-minute meeting. And you just look at it and go, wow. You've literally not even looked at the LinkedIn profile of the person that you're talking to.
Could be nervous or over trying or something like that. Could have been.
No, I don't think in this case it wasn't.
I think you can't be too forgiving there. I think ultimately it's pretty obvious. Like if you're interviewing with somebody, especially if you're interviewing CEO of the business, like you should actually know what the hell that business is all about. I mean, you can't be wasting people's time like that. So basics on this. But Adam, you actually introduced your second great idea. So it's two today. Amazing.
It's more than two today. It's two this hour, you mean?
I'm counting two. But network value. The concept is network value. Like, you're hiring a recruiter not only for the effort they're going to put in, but are they bringing in like a load of like connections from people that you know, would be really useful for you? Someone who's like really heavily connected with a bunch of engineers, you know what? Guess what? That's probably going to be pretty good at hiring engineers compared to someone who has no experience that way. So analyzing someone's network value, I think, is a legitimate way of doing it. How easy that is to do, extracting from LinkedIn, I'm not sure whether it provides you with that information or whether there's other platforms that allow you to do this. I used to work for a company that measured this, but I don't know of another business that measures network influence, so to speak. But I think a legitimate way to assess. So there's one way of doing it. Give me some others. A quick fire. What other ways do you assess a recruiter saying, yo, that's actually interesting. That's definitely value add. It's an impressive thing that makes me feel more comfortable moving forward with a hire. Thoughts on this? Anybody? Open.
I love it. Here we go again.
Well, I'll say this really quickly and move on because it's a short point. But we focus a lot in the early stages of our interviews on technical skills, on sourcing skills, because recruiters are really good, like most people, we're really good at spinning the hyperbole and putting in lots of words that sound great, but we really want to get underneath that. It's like, I'm really good at social recruiting. Okay, well, what does that mean? What tools do you use specifically? How do you do this? What have you found out in your experience? So we go really heavily into that because it helps us assess curiosity. It helps us assess their technical skills. And it also helps us understand how they would level based on the levels of roles that we have.
Right, that's fine. So that's almost like a technical assessment, but it's still assessing via interview, right? But it's still looking at how they go about their work. So I think
and
that's
how they think about it, Hung. Not just how they go about it, but yep. Almost what's that cognitive process they have around their work. That's also what we're really looking at there.
Okay, would you set a challenge? Do you do that where you say, "Hey, how would you recruit for this role?" Give them the
dummy roles. We do it conversationally. We don't ask them to go away and do like an online test or set them. I know that some people do. I know that some of them do like almost like you would do for a dev, that they do a tech test. I'm just not that on board with that. I feel that the conversation that you get, that's where you're getting a lot more than just the answers to the questions in terms of the technical bit.
Yep. Okay. Let's focus on this one for time being, like assessing this person's sourcing skills. How do you do that, Mark?
I don't, because not every recruiter is a good source. It's that simple. I'm more interested in how they source and not the Booleans part, but which kind of networks did they use? Are they outside of LinkedIn? All those kind of things. I want to see mindset. So instead of asking about sourcing, I ask something differently. I ask, how do you build a recruitment strategy from start to end? What do you want? Where do you start? Where do you end? And in that strategy, I want to hear things like, I'm going to talk to my hiring manager about platforms where I should source. What's the environment that I need to be in? I want to see them talking to the engineering teams or whatever teams to learn more about what they're looking for. I want them to talk about research. I want them to talk about actually using events or anything else. Often I just get, I open the rec with the hiring manager, I kick it off, I go to LinkedIn, I post it, and I source.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a strategy. That makes me worry.
That's really interesting because when I talk about sourcing, everything you said, that's what I mean as well. I think it's the nuances of recruitment where that's exactly when you say technical skills around sourcing. It's what are the other networks you're going to? Have you even heard of some of the other platforms? You know, if you profess to be a tech recruiter and you're not able to talk about having interacted with GitHub or Stack Overflow at any point in terms of as a recruiter, I'm a little bit concerned. It's definitely not about Boolean string searches. It's exactly that. And it's the plasticity of their thinking around, like one of the questions we will ask is, you know, tell us about a really tough role that you had to hire for. What was tough about finding those candidates and what did you try? And we don't care what the actual answer is. We care about all of the avenues that they thought about trying, not necessarily whether they were successful or not, but do they have that repertoire of options in their heads? Yeah.
So it's creative thinking. That's it. A lot of that's creativity. Question though, if you're hiring a sourcer and they're not fluent in Boolean and, you know, X-ray search and things like that, would that be a problem?
Not for us, because we built our own sourcing platform. So we've effectively automated a lot of that for them at the front end. So we've got a tool that automatically searches across 54 structured and unstructured data sources. They don't need to use Boolean syntax to do that. So actually what we care about much more in our sourcers is how they're able to understand the brief and then actually engage the candidate, know which candidates are the right ones to reach out, but also know how you might change your approach based on one candidate versus another. We're not really worried about somebody understanding how Boolean searches work, as an example.
Fully agree. Yep. And there's so many tooling nowadays. I hardly know sources that purely only do Boolean anymore.
Well, even with GDPR, it doesn't work, right? Because you sit there and you can Boolean search all you want and go search or go source native, as we call it. Then what do you do with that data? You're going to aggregate it onto a spreadsheet. How's that going to work? So yeah, we don't ask them to do that, Adam. We automate all of that at the front end.
So it's okay. All about curiosity. It's all about doing research. It's all about understanding what you do. This is the thing that we need to ask recruiters to see if they understand what they're doing.
Okay. We're going to move on to the final part of this, and then we'll move on to the questions, folks. Thanks, by the way, Mark and Katrina for this. What about the context? We talked about culture before. Katrina, you actually mentioned moving people from different customers and actually significant differences in performance from the same individual. So how do you kind of get the sense of, oh, this is a good fit for that client? Or Farah, in your case, how do I get the sense this person is going to be great working in all this portfolio? Mark, in your case, bringing this person in, how do you know they're going to be great for GitLab? Like, this person might have the great CV, great LinkedIn, it's all there, but the fit into that kind of other colleagues or that context, how do we get better at aligning those things? Is there a way, or is it just like got to throw a dart board?
There's a way, and that's a good structured interview. If you have a good structured interview process, so for instance, what I've noticed is when I was applying for a recruiter, and trust me, I've applied a lot. What I saw is that you often are talking to a peer, a manager, and the hiring manager, and maybe a director. That's it. And that won't find you a fit for a company. What I like to do is get them to talk to a peer on the business side, so business people, partner, something like that, and to the actual hiring manager. In my case, I'm in-house, so it's easier. But actually let them talk to a hiring manager, see if they understand the culture of the people they're working with. Because we, as recruiters, it's easy, right? You understand each other. But can they convey that to a technical hiring manager and the other way around? Is that partnership there? And then you can actually see if there is a fit.
Right. I love this. So you're basically saying, let's open up the aperture in terms of who gets to interact with the candidate. It's not only just me who's hiring them. It's who this person is going to interface with and get them the sort of other business interfaces to be present and contribute to that conversation. And they can help kind of generate some information for us. Okay, quickly.
I'm worried if I don't get that chance to talk to somebody on the business side.
I totally get it. It's actually a good kind of litmus test for the recruiting as a candidate going forward to a job. It's like quite interesting for you to see whether you can, because you, it's in your interest to get cultural fit, the sort of the fit of the business, right? You need to also do that due diligence as well. Okay, how about you, Katrina? You've hired a few people, you've dropped them into these places, but you know what? Have you got better at understanding where they'll be like superstars rather than, you know, just okay?
Yeah, and it is slightly different for us because, like you've already alluded to, we need to hire amazing recruiters, but also people who have the ability to move to different projects. They go on to work with a client for anywhere from 6 months to 12 months, and then they're probably, when that project's finished and that delivery has been done, they'll move on to a different client. So we actually have, as part of our recruitment process, one of the things that we're assessing against is what we call placeability. Which is just our term for it. And it's effectively, how easy would it be to lift this person and actually put them in with client X versus client Y versus client Z, and they're equally going to be able to morph to fit with those clients. And if we get somebody who is an amazing recruiter, but they're incredibly low on placeability, we don't think they've got that plasticity in terms of being able to adapt their style and approach for different clients, would we still hire them Possibly, but it would mean that we would know that we are hiring them for a very limited range of clients who they would work really well with, because they need to be happy, right? We want our recruiters to be happy, and we also want our clients to be happy. We don't want our people going in feeling somewhere that they're uncomfortable. So that's a big factor for us. You know, our ideal is getting somebody who we're like, look, this person could literally work anywhere and fit in with pretty much anybody.
Yeah, I like that. It's basically understanding where they would fit, and the placeability kind of marker is useful for RPO, but also for portfolio type stuff, for Farah stuff, I reckon. Okay, very quickly on this, Farah, we'll go to you on sort of how do we understand this person is going to get it, so to speak? Yeah. Like, is there a way to do it, or is it just like too difficult you know, for us to actually assess effectively?
Yeah, so one of the things that I think, going back to Katrina, one of your points earlier around the growth mindset, I think one of the things I try to double down on in terms of evaluation is how receptive people are to feedback. So if they've had multiple touch points with myself or the team, and potentially other stakeholders, usually before I make an offer or I get to that final sort of stage and make that decision, I will, generally speaking, give someone some feedback that we are concerned about X, Y, or Z, and just see how they respond to that feedback and have a conversation around like what that feedback means, how they can kind of take a moment to self-reflect. And for me, that growth mindset and ability to kind of deal with that feedback and have a very human conversation, right? There's a lot of like trust, authenticity that's required, and I think in these types of roles. So I think you have that awkward or uncomfortable conversation around feedback and see how they respond.
That's a really good point. I think that sometimes people take feedback as criticism. And they can respond quite aggressively or defensively. And you do wonder, okay, this person might struggle in an environment where feedback is freely shared, or may struggle just to be overly sensitive, let's say, in that scenario. And that gives you a sense that maybe they'll be difficult to bring in. Listen, folks, we have to move on because time is pressing. Let's go to the questions real quick. Okay, let's start with the first one. Highest vote is from Sienna Sonnenberg. Sienna saying, what does a recruiter need to show in terms of skill or curiosity to dive into a recruitment domain they haven't recruited in? So in other words, career changer. This person wants to work in a tech domain they haven't worked in before. Is it a straight no, or what is it that they need to do? I'm not asking you, Mark, because you've already given a good answer on this. I'm going to go to Katrina on this one. How would you hire someone who is out of domain, have recruiting experience, don't have the domain? How do you know they're going to be good?
So for us, if we are hiring somebody that has got limited or no domain experience in that vertical, it would be tough. Because we would have to hire them into a more junior position and get them that experience. Because if you think about our team, we need them to be able to go in front of a client pretty quickly after they've joined us, after they've had their induction training and been onboarded. So it's a little bit different for us. But we do have it. We've hired one lady. I don't know if she's on stay or not. We've hired one lady who's been like a part-time recruiter on the side, but her main job was being a midwife in the NHS. And she's fallen out of love with midwifery, and she literally joined us about a month ago into our internal TA team, and has been able to demonstrate how she's got a whole bunch of amazing skills. She's never done rec to rec before, but we're able to put that support structure around her to get her upskilled, but she's able to show us that, like, that curiosity and that passion we've already talked about. Yeah. I think honestly, if someone's saying, look, I've always been a corporate recruiter, and now I want to move to doing tech, I'd be asking them about examples of when they had gone out of vertical before and how they approach that. So you're like, if you've always done corporate, have you ever done anything else? Yeah, I did some GCM recruitment. Oh, okay, so how did you learn about that? And what was the process you went through trying to figure that out would probably be my approach.
Yeah, very, very good. Okay, moving swiftly on. Alla Pavlova has asked this question. Don't you think we're too hard on recruiters when we're interviewing them? Is it possible that we kind of break people's balls a little bit too much as they come, because we're all recruiters and you have to be tough and all this. Is that the case? And two, what's your favorite question to ask a question to a recruiter? Farah, let's go with you on this one.
I think recruiters have to be relentless. Like, I think it's a tough game. I think it's, there's a sales element to it. There's a lot of no's, like a lot of rejection. And I think you have to be relentless. So I don't necessarily think we're too hard on them. And at the end of the day, you're trying to build your own team. So there's a lot of like internal, intrinsic sort of motivation behind why. But yeah, I don't think we're too hard.
Yeah. Okay. And your favorite question?
My favorite question is, why shouldn't we hire you?
Why should we not hire you? Yes.
Why should we not hire you?
I like it. Yeah, yeah. I would have a very long answer to that question. That would be the entire interview.
And accurate as well.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Final one. This is to you, Mark, from Jim Beresford. What is the one thing you look for now in 2022 that you didn't in 2019 when recruiting a recruiter? So we're looking at, okay, has the game changed for us a little bit? I love this question.
What a question. Great.
Yeah, Mark, your thoughts on this?
It's a tough one. I've basically been doing it the same way all over time. But with the enormous amount of applicants you get nowadays, I look far more into the curiosity. Normally, I would look at, hey, are they curious enough? Okay, let's see what they can do. Now I actually go into the whole strategy part, right? What I mentioned before, build that strategy for me. That's what I'm looking for right now, because I want to make sure that who I'm working with, I won't do it, but I can just drop them in the ocean and say, swim, go ahead. Go to a new hiring manager, find out how the team works, find out how you need to do your stuff, find out where you need to go. I want them to be able to do that. They don't have to do it, but I want them to be able to think like that.
Yeah, yeah, I totally get it. Great answer and great question as well, Jim. That actually might set us up for a future Brain Food Lab. I agree with you, Adam. What has fundamentally changed? Is there anything? I think maybe, Mark, in your situation, perhaps it hasn't, because it's always been remote distributed business, right? So GitLab kind of recruiting the same thing. But lots of companies have made that shift. So have the recruiting skills changed? And actually, does that mean our recruiting of recruiters needs to change? Future show, folks. Okay, that's it, everybody. We're out of time. We're well over time, in fact. So I need to thank everyone for joining us. Mark Dubal, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Great to see you. We'll definitely bring you back on. Farah, thanks for being very persistent, dropping on and off. Great to see you on the show. Great contribution. You have a great weekend. And Katrina, thank you so much for spending time. If I knew you were ill, I wouldn't have asked you to come. You know you could have just chilled out, right? So make yourself a hot toddy or something and have a good rest. And hopefully I'll see you soon, okay? You got
thank
it.
Thank you.
Cool. Wow, that was great. I thought that was amazing. So thank you, everybody, for watching the show. We are back next week. We are going to be talking, should TA reintegrate with HR? We've got a lot of people saying he should. I know a lot of people saying they shouldn't. Adam, you might be saying they shouldn't, which we need a dissenting voice on that. Is HR into marketing? Is HR into HR? This is sort of recruiting into HR. We're going back to this conversation because I think that we've been spending time rowing away from HR, but I think we need to row back. But I want us to talk about it and want us to be challenged on it. So if you've enjoyed this conversation, make sure you follow the channel. You'll be notified when we're live next, which will be next Friday. Okay, that's about it, everybody. I hope you've enjoyed the show. We'll see you next week. Cool. Excellent show. Thanks for hanging around, Adam.
Great show. Great. I'm gonna tell you the honest truth. when I saw the title or the subject of the show when I first saw it a couple of weeks ago,
I thought,
it's not that I didn't fancy. I just thought I'm not entirely sure we've got a lot to talk about on that. But you know, how wrong was I? That could have gone on and on and on. Mark said it deserves a part two. It really does.
You know, really I love.
There was three or four times there when you went, okay, what does everybody think about this? What else is there? And all three guests started talking at the same time because they've all got things to say. You know, that's a sign of a good topic, I think.
I might actually write this up because there was like lots of good points that was raised that I think could be a decent handbook or a guidebook for people. Because I think a lot of times recruiting, we can be complacent because we do a lot of recruiting. We assume we know what we're doing. But then we just kind of do all of the worst practices by saying, you know, the I'll know it when I see it type of recruiting, right? And it's like, yeah, just get them in or get her on a Zoom and you'll figure it out. But there's lots of like little things that we can do to mitigate risk or to improve, you know, the chances of hiring somebody great. Anyway, that's it, I guess. What are you doing this weekend, man? Anything interesting?
Yeah, I'm getting in the car tomorrow morning and I'm going to go and stay with family in the Midlands for a couple of days, my sister. Okay. Me and Ruri are going to go and do that. And then on Monday, we're heading to Centre Parks and cool. The rest of my family are coming south. So we're going down there and then they're coming down on Monday. So I'm Centre Parks for 5 days. Did you say the show? Is it next week when we're talking about should TA be in HR or in? Yeah, I'm not here.
Oh, you can't do it. Oh, crap.
Yeah. That's all right. You haven't put me in anyway. You must have substituted me already. Yeah.
I haven't.
It's a show. I'd quite like. What time is it at? It's a show I'd quite like to do. To be honest, I've got a lot of thoughts on that subject.
But you're going to be on Centre Parks, eh?
Yeah, but I'll probably be back by like mid afternoon. So if it's at like 3 or something, then
it'll be at 2 though. So it's like
I'll probably be able to do it. I think we've got to leave it. In fact, we've got to leave Centre Parks by 10. So you know, I'll be back by 12. So if you want me to do it, I'd love to.
Yeah, I want you to do it. So just ping me, man. And let me know if you're there. We'll drop you in because I think everyone agrees with me, which I don't want. And I know you disagree with me, so we should get you into that.
As often as possible. So I'll be there definitely.
Cool. All right, man. Listen, have a good weekend. Enjoy Centre Parks, man.
Cheers. See ya.
Cool. I'm very tired. Got a bit drunk yesterday. Had to say, I'm sorry. This is like hungover. So yeah, bath.